Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to OGCI's Talking Transition podcast series. I'm Susan Kish, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. This series looks at how the Oil and Gas Climate Initiative, or OGCI, works. What actually does the energy transition really mean? What are the hard questions and messy issues? And what are the challenges and opportunities that this energy transition may bring? We're going to frame this conversation around what, why, how, and who. So let's start with the what. Flaring is the most visible part of the problem of greenhouse gas emissions in the oil and gas industry. Sometimes flaring is used for safety reasons, but the real problem is around routine flaring. That means burning off gas that is found when drilling for oil, rather than collecting and selling it. Thousands of gas flares at oil production sites around the globe burn about 140 billion cubic meters of natural gas annually, which is the same amount of gas as is consumed by the whole of sub-Saharan Africa. That 140 billion cubic meters causes more than 300 million tons of CO2 equivalent to be emitted into the atmosphere. It's a big problem, and it's getting worse, not better. So why? Well, flaring, as mentioned above, causes both CO2 and methane emissions, and it actually can be stopped. It's not a technical problem. It's a problem of the lack of infrastructure, regulations, incentives. Every OGCI member supports the aims of the World Bank's Zero Routine Flaring by 2030 program. That program works with governments and companies to put measures in place to eliminate routine flaring. And who are we? Well, OGCI is composed of 12 companies from around the world who together account for almost 30% of global oil and gas production. At OGCI, they work together towards achieving net zero emissions. Who's our guest today? Morgan Bazilian. He is the director of the Payne Institute for Public Policy at the Colorado School of Mines. His institute is in charge of the satellite program that has been detecting global flaring for several years and providing data to the World Bank and others. The Payne Institute is working with OGCI to improve that data and, most importantly, to make it accessible and meaningful for companies, governments, NGOs, the media, so that routine flaring becomes unthinkable by the end of the decade. So, Morgan, good morning, welcome, and thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Susan. Thanks for having me on.
We're glad to have you here. So, let's start with, what is this World Bank satellite program that the Payne Institute is working on, and how does it actually work?
Our work ranges generally under the genre of energy transitions. In other words, we look at research and convening education and solutions around global energy transitions, of which flaring is one topic our satellite group delves into. That satellite group is called the Earth Observation Group. And the Earth Observation Group has several different products, of which something called the Night Fire, which detects fires, flares, and other infrared emitters. So today we're talking about what we call the VIIRS Night Fire product. And the VIIRS is a visible infrared imaging radiometer suite. That's VIIRS. It is a NASA and NOAA instrument that is currently flying on two different satellites. So there are two of these instruments. Each one of these instruments costs about $1 billion, and they were originally designed as weather prediction. So their primary mission is weather prediction. And they have a daily and nightly global coverage, about a 1 kilometer spatial resolution. And they do 14 orbits of the Earth every day, each of them. So we have two of those. And we focus on the data, not the weather data, but rather the nighttime data where we can see infrared and visible spectrum. And the work we do on flaring is used by the World Bank for their Global Gas Flaring Reduction Partnership, which is, as you mentioned, a global partnership looking to reduce routine flaring. But there are also a host of other users, from companies to consultancies to researchers, who use the flaring data. So we get that data about 4 hours after it is taken from the satellite. And then we use algorithms to clean and come up with the product that is a estimator of total flaring.
And I have to say, the name Nightfire is that's a very cool name.
Thank you. I didn't come up. I wish I had come up with it.
It has sort of slight James Bondian overlays. How much data is this? Are we talking just massive amounts? If it has 14 passes and every day for two satellites, 23 spectral bonds, that just feels like a ginormous amount of data.
That's right. So it is, Susan. The term of art these days is big data, of course. And, yes, we use the other sort of cool terms these days in statistics. No one thought that statistics was going to be cool, but we do use machine learning techniques and many other techniques of processing such large quantities of data. And it takes considerable expertise and experience just to handle that kind of data, as well as over a decade of experience, in fact, closer to two, in coming up with and refining the algorithms that can take that multispectral data and turn it into a product that means something to someone. In other words, how we get a proxy for the total amount of gas flared on the planet every night.
What's the latency to get it in a form that can get used?
Yeah, so we process it basically on a daily basis. And that's part of the project we're working with OGCI on, with your very kind support, which is to come up with user-friendly ways to access this data. So currently it is released on an open access basis with a 6-month delay. So we do a certain other cleaning of the data. So take out cloud cover, nights and things like this. And we produce that on an open access basis with a 6-month delay. And then we're working with OGCI to make the daily data more accessible to non-technical people. So in other words, to journalists and to those companies and institutions that do not have a data processing or data science skill set.
So it's going to go from 6 months to daily, twice a day, real time? How are you?
We're still working on that, Susan. So I think we're going to have to test that and beta test how we put it out over the course of this project with OGCI, but likely on a daily basis. So there would be a daily figure. Where right now, most of the data that we put out, say for the World Bank, is just aggregated on an annual basis. So it's considerably more detailed or at least accessible on a quicker basis.
Morgan, thanks. What in terms of making sure the data is accurate, as I understand it, the OGCI member companies are going to help calibrate that so that those 15,000 to 16,000 flares, you can get some additional third-party data to make sure they correspond to actual facilities.
We have, over the last many years, used different ways to calibrate our estimates from the satellite data to reality of what's happening on the ground. And so we have traditionally paid for a facility to do flares when the satellites are overhead and looking at different levels. And so we can calibrate the algorithms for temperature and scale. And, you know, I think our hope is that both that the OGCI companies and the support will help with further calibration from different facilities and maybe more facilities or different kinds of facilities, as well as helping to check our numbers against what we're seeing on the ground at their facilities.
Got it. So once we get the data accessible, clear, translated from, as you put it, big data to something more actionable. What's the best case in terms of action that will result from this? I mean, do you think it's going to be used by investors to decide where they're going to put their money? Is it going to be used by regulators? How will that data, once it's made more frequent and more accessible, be used?
Yeah, I think that's the important question, Susan. I think it's going to be used by both investors and regulators and a company, so all of the above. So what we're seeing is a lot of interest in how to access this data for various reporting. So, you know, that reporting structures range from ESG reporting at both the company level and financial level to companies trying to differentiate themselves in terms of things like responsible natural gas, low emissions along the supply chain, oil, et cetera, et cetera. Once you have that as a formal regulatory requirement, then there's obviously a need to measure it or show the outputs. And so that's one place you'll see that. On the financial side and at the company level, you're seeing much more pressure from shareholder activists to the financial institutions themselves, to, of course, the wider community, environmental community, and communities that live close to these operations. And as we noted, flaring is the most visible part of that process. And so obviously we can see it from space. You can certainly see it from next door. And so that pressure is going to lead to the need for more data and measuring the use of that data. If you're starting to see supply chain considerations around emissions in the oil and gas sector, then again, the measuring of flaring will be an important component of that. So I think it's going to be used by all of those places, including the consulting companies whose clients are asking them to help them look at this.
In order for routine flaring to be eliminated, do you have a sense of how much that would cost? Because as we talked about, or as I've understood, it isn't that the technology doesn't exist. So is this a $1 trillion problem, or is this a, you know, $100 billion problem, which I think is the estimate that GGFR came out with? And what's holding this back from being addressed more pragmatically and with more urgency?
Yeah, so we've talked a lot about the data and the data science and the use of that data in reporting, and a little bit on the regulations. The other piece is how markets and policy and infrastructure combine to create an enabling environment to move to zero routine flaring. So that is a combination of all of those pressures on company decisions, just like anything else. And as to the total sort of beautiful number you would come to eliminate this problem, I actually don't have a great sense of that. And whatever number I or anyone else gave you could be off by several orders of magnitude. But I would say that, like everything else, an academic would say it depends. And so, you know, what you hear a lot is, we simply don't have the infrastructure to move this gas to market. And then in some cases you hear, especially in West Texas in the United States, well, it doesn't make any sense to go to market with a product that is trading at a negative number or near zero number. In other words, the gas, associated gas, is not worth anything in some cases. But both of those arguments, while they are valid, in other words, they're true, you know, there's still going to have to be movement to move beyond them. In other words, there is no great technical barrier to removing the routine flaring of gas, right? There is a technical barrier to the non-routine flaring, that is at the beginning when you have pressure buildup or something like that.
Safety stuff, right?
Yeah, that there's safety stuff, but that's minimal compared to an ongoing routine flare that is done primarily for infrastructure market and policy pressures. And so I think despite those arguments that, again, are valid, there's going to be movement at the regulatory and policy space to say, look, tough luck. You still, you know, whether it affects your overall revenue or means that we're going to have to work together to figure out infrastructure issues, then that's going to be the direction of travel. And you're already seeing that a little bit, not only in the kind of regulations that are put up by the state of Colorado, as an example, or Alaska, but the zero routine flaring initiative that the World Bank has shown that a lot of countries and both IOCs and NOCs are interested in and think they can do this by 2030. You're also seeing tremendous pressure from communities and general, not just environmental organizations, but community organizations everywhere else to say, look, this is, if you're going to get a social, you know, informally, if you're going to have a social license to operate, then you better take care of the flaring problem, because it is just brutally apparent when you send up a huge flame into space. And I guess there's been some signals recently from BP I saw around working on some of these infrastructure issues and combining them with, not only could they get more gathering and infrastructure for the associated gas to market or to other things. In other words, it doesn't have to just go to the market per se. It can go to actual providing electricity generation, be used in industry and manufacturing, fertilizer, et cetera. Of course, gas is a terrific fuel for multiple items. But also that they're linking that infrastructure and gathering with the future need for doing the same thing with CO2, high pressure CO2 that would be part of a carbon capture, utilization, and storage, which, you know, under certain scenarios or certain guesses, I guess the better way to say it, could be a huge amount of carbon dioxide that has to be moved around as well and stored. And so there may be synergies between the two. So I think that those non-technical barriers, while they exist today, are going to have to be moved and perhaps in sort of a direct and rough way in order to make the changes needed, at least initially.
There's a lot of investment and interest in technologies and companies and frameworks to detect methane emissions at the satellite level and the airplane level and drones and sort of the whole way, the full range. Can any of that investment be leveraged to also measure flares, or are these two different worlds of measurement?
They're roughly different worlds of measurement, but I think where there are considerable areas of overlap are what we started this conversation with, decades of work on algorithms,
data
processing, data science, data foundations that, you know, tend not to be the sexiest topics for most of the people. You know, the cooler topics are, hey, we're going to launch a satellite and it's going to do cool stuff. Yes, it is. But some of the experiences we have with doing the day-to-day work on the data science are absolutely fundamental to getting good products out and rigorous products out. And that's a big part of the work we're doing with OGCI.
That makes a lot of sense. So, Morgan, I've known you for many years. As we were talking about earlier, I think when we first met, you were based in Ireland and I lived in Switzerland. Now I live in Boston and you're out in Colorado. But why are you working at the Payne Institute and on an issue like flaring? And can you sort of talk about what drove that decision?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, when we met, I was working in the government in Ireland, and we met through our mutual friend, Michael Liebreich.
Right.
And from there, I moved to the United Nations for 4 or 5 years, working on energy and poverty and development. And then I moved from the UN to the World Bank on the same topics, energy and development. And during that time, with a lot of focus on energy in developing countries, least developed countries, countries in conflict or fragile states, the one topic that came up among many was this wasteful aspect of flaring, right? So you talked at the head of the top of this discussion around the amount and how it compared to the amount of, say, gas use or power generation on the sub-Saharan African subcontinent. And, you know, that really struck me as both an important visual and motivating aspect, but also just as an enormous amount of waste that showed the dire need for, you know, infrastructure and regulation and policy to address these things. Because again, if it's not a technical issue primarily, putting up power systems is not a technical issue primarily. It is an issue of investment and regulation and governance and all the messy stuff.
Right.
And so that's how I guess I got into the flaring side. When I moved to academia, so I do have a academic degree in the sciences, I had never acted as a real academic. And so I had this opportunity to change my life and move to Colorado and become an academic. I jumped at it because it had it's sort of how my brain works best anyway. And so I had the opportunity to come to this terrific university, which is a small public research university, and start this institute that took that sort of translated or linked that technical expertise to the rest of the world and to context. And so that's what we're doing now. And it's been lovely.
It sounds really cool. Plus, you're in Colorado. I mean, how cool is that?
That's right. Yeah. The best state, or I guess it was ranked second best after Hawaii, which I can accept in the United States.
Exactly. Well, listen, Morgan, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Susan. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, thank you for joining us as we looked at the core questions and challenges around flaring in general, around routine flaring, around using that satellite data more accurately, more frequently, and in a way that actually drives concrete action. For more information about oil and gas climate initiative, please visit our website, which is at ogci.com, and about our members' commitments to zero routine flaring. And to follow us, as well as OGCI Climate Investments, which is our billion-plus fund investing in technologies and projects to accelerate decarbonization, please follow us on LinkedIn and on Twitter at OGCI News. Our next podcast, we're going to talk to Professor Sally Benson of the Precord Institute at Stanford about the nuts and bolts of carbon, how to capture, store it, use it, and more. We are at a tipping point of interest and commitment around CCUS and these technologies, and we're really looking forward to this conversation. And finally, thank you to my colleagues and production team here at OGCI, our editors for this edition, Delia Meth-Cohen, and our producer, Jason De La Cruz. Again, thank you for listening. Stay safe, and good morning, good afternoon, and good evening.